You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay, bringing you news in our community. During this interview, I'm talking with Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Matt Zacher on Wednesday, January 21st, 2026. Thank you for joining me, Matt, to bring the community an update from the city of Wisconsin Rapids.
You're welcome. Thank you, as always, for having me, Melissa.
And a quick thank you to Joe Bachman and the Wisconsin Rapids Community Media for filming this interview. You can watch the video version of this interview on the city website, wirapids.gov, and also on Wisconsin Rapids Community Media's Facebook page and YouTube channel. Well, Mayor, I'm very glad to have you here with us. We just had a very important city council meeting on Tuesday this week. So let's start with some of the results of what took place on that meeting, January 20th. There were two hot button items that were pulled out of committee minutes and voted on separately. Let's start with the solar power array that the Waterworks and Lighting Commission has been working on for quite a long period of time, but that residents learned about this fall. The Planning Commission voted on January 5th to approve changing the zoning of the parcel on Whitrock and 2 Mile Avenue to a C1 conservancy. That vote passed 7-0. They also voted on approving a conditional use permit to construct the solar power plant on that parcel, and that motion carried 5-2. Now, the Finance and Property Committee meeting on January 13th, they voted down the financing for the solar power array. That motion failed 0-2. So the question of approving the financing was pulled out during the council meeting and voted on. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
No, you're right.
Okay.
It was pulled out of the minutes, and the entire council had a chance to talk about it again and vote on it in the entirety of the council.
Okay. So let's break this down a little bit for listeners. That was kind of the process through the committee meetings. What happens now? The motion did pass 5-3. So what are the next steps?
For the solar array itself, I guess I would have to reach out to WWLC, Todd Weiler, the GM there, just to talk about timelines and everything else. But what we did was we agreed, or the council agreed, to sign the contract for the land and how that's going to play out so that they can start the clearing and the building process of the solar panels and the fence that'll go around it and everything that goes into that. They also committed to making sure that they would densify the woods. It's going to be 150 to 250 foot border around the entire array, but also, you know, where there are neighborhoods around that whole 80 acre parcel, to be able to densify those areas more with different bushes and trees and whatever, to make sure that nobody can see the array from their houses anyway. So it shouldn't be any different than it is now in terms of any kind of property values or anything like that changing.
Because that was a lot of the concern that you were hearing from people.
Yeah, there's multiple concerns. That's obviously a big one, and certainly we don't want to affect people's property values. But at the same time, there's lots of things that happen in the community that, you know, could be perceived as affecting the home values in that neighborhood. For example, Mary's Place has done a great job in what they asked to do. But when that came up, I was on council, and there's a certain neighborhood that was going into, and those were the folks that were concerned about it. Whereas the other seven districts were like, no, we can't not do, you know, we can't do the not in my backyard thing anymore. Well, that's kind of for everything. When it's for the betterment of people and for the entire community, I think that we have to be able to look at the bigger picture. Again, if the council decides not to do it, I don't think anybody would have sweat. I think ultimately we're happy, we're relieved to kind of have a decision and be able to move forward, whether it would have been yes or no. I think we're in a good place to move forward. We did do the best we could to slow it down, realizing, like, even in my stint as mayor, to be able to get ahead of things. But there's so many moving parts to this, and when the federal government did away with the incentives for any solar projects, that's really what kicked this into high gear. And then it was a matter of bringing it, you know, to the planning committee, bringing it to the finance and property, bringing it to the council, and getting all that done, slowing it down enough so it was over a 3-month period instead of just trying to get it all done in 1 month, which I didn't agree with either. So I did what I could to kind of make sure we could work within the rules, but also get it to slow down as much as possible so that everybody
people had
felt
a chance
to talk about it and vent their frustrations and answer the questions.
Once that letter of intent was signed, that allowed you to continue these conversations into January.
There was
no option to change the location. Is that correct?
The options were always out there and they were being talked about, especially once we talked about putting it into conservancy. Todd Weiler brought multiple locations up as to why it, you know, we talked about it and why they decided not to make that the first priority. Mm-hmm. And one would have been, you know, we talked about putting it on top of landfills, which is not the best case scenario. It's an option, and we could still do it for that matter if this works and we're providing 1/6 of our power. On average, our power demand. If we did another one, we'd be at two-thirds of our power demand, just like that. Mm-hmm. In terms of, we use on average about 30 megawatts of power to run the city, and this is providing 5 megawatts of that power. So we do another one somewhere else, if it makes sense. Again, the incentives are gone now, so we mm-hmm. don't have that helping us make decisions. But ultimately, when he went through all the possibilities, it started to make less and less financial sense to put it anywhere else in the community, because either one, it was going to take too long to get the approvals, or two, it was too far away from our distribution system at a 3-phase capacity to be able to plug it in. So every so far, it's going to go another $100,000 up to $1 million, and then it's not economically feasible anymore. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit more about the parcel itself. It's an 80-acre plot. Yep. And they're only going to be clearing 40 acres of it, but yes. The solar panels are only going to be occupying 25
acres. Or I heard 23, but I always thought it was 25.
Somewhere in that range. Yeah. And then they're also going to be planting native pollinator plants under the solar power.
Under solar power within that 40 acres. So the fence will be around the solar panels, and then there'll be a broader open area with that same field of native plants and wildflowers, stuff like that. That's going to, you know, in the end, bring in, and I know this, some people are going to care. I mean, to me, the most impressive or learning experience about this was just so many different opinions and where they come from and the emotions behind them or the information behind them. That was always the interesting part. Mm-hmm. On that side, we're going to have this neat, you know, a very unique field of, like you said, native plants, wildflowers that are going to create its own ecosystem of animals and insects that'll be there. You know, so I think that there's an upside to that. And again, the woods will be there. People will still be able to walk around there.
That was my next question. Yeah, it's still open to the public.
We're not shutting it down. There'll be a fence around the solar array so that, you know, we keep out anybody wanting to do nefarious things there.
Or just to know what area is not open to the public.
Yeah. So I think, again, there's going to be a lot of positives. And I think once the folks see, once it's up and running, that nobody even knows it's there. You know, it'll be forgotten, and it'll be bringing us power for the next 30 up to 40 years if we extend that contract and the materials themselves are still in good shape. So,
do you know the scope of the project, like how long it's going to take to build, or any of those questions?
I don't remember offhand. I know it's going to start pretty quick and make it through the process pretty quick, because the sooner they get it up, the sooner they're making, you know, they're generating that electricity and everybody's making money off of that electricity. So I know they're not going to be wasting time, but I don't want to give specifics.
Right. And this is a local, Wisconsin-based company.
OneEnergy is the company that's building the array. They'll be monitoring the array, making sure if any damage happens to repair it right away. And the way they're making money, and to keep in mind too, this electricity is all behind the meter. So if you think about your house, you have a meter on your house. If you put a solar panel in your yard and plug it into your electrical system in the house behind the meter, meaning that's going right into your system, your house. So you're using mm-hmm. your own electricity. Granted,
so it's more staying
complicated
here.
Than that.
Yes, it's not going out on the full grid.
And that's how this is. So we have a meter at our city limits or WWLC's limit. And this will, all this electricity will stay in our distribution system within the city. So therefore, we won't be bringing as much power in from the grid from other generating, electrical generating systems that are out there that we bring it in now. So we just have less capacity to fill, which is where we're saving money on it. granted, we're still paying something for the money that we're getting from One Energy from our solar panels, but it's going to be at a much reduced rate, which is what's going to allow us to save a little bit of money. Very little for residents, but for bigger businesses that we want to come here manufacturing, they are looking to be able to save a ton of money because they use a ton of electricity compared to a household.
Right. Well, let's take a brief pause here to hear from our sponsors. I'm Melissa Kay talking with Mayor Matt Zacher, and you're listening to Perspective on 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR. Welcome. You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay, bringing you news in our community. I'm speaking with Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Matt Zacher, and we just discussed in full the approval for Waterworks and Lighting to build the solar power array on that parcel. Now let's move into another topic that was discussed during the Common Council meeting on the 20th, and that is another hot button item that has been talked about for quite a long period of time here in Wisconsin Rapids, and that is approval of ATV UTV use on some roads. So the Public Works Committee has been working on a referral dealing with ATV UTV traffic travel on roads that are basically half open and half closed. These streets under discussion are partially owned by surrounding municipalities that allow recreational vehicle traffic and by the city, which doesn't allow that traffic. City staff have been working since the fall to determine which roads are impacted by this, and specific routes were approved at their meeting on January 8th. So this was pulled out to be voted on separately during the Common Council meeting, and this passed 5-3. So let's talk about this a little bit more. These streets are kind of on the edges of town, or where people were landlocked, so to speak.
It was more designed, and this was a conversation that started way back, you know, even before the referendum that was passed. It's got to be a year ago, even maybe more than that. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed at how fast these last 2 years have flown.
It flies by, yeah. Doesn't it?
But it's been, you know, this has been a conversation going on since I've been on council. I feel like it just got started. So probably 4 or 5 years at this point. And it was always kind of out there. And they went ahead when they didn't get the council to pass, the ordinance to allow ATV UTVs in the community. They went ahead with that referendum. And at that time, the referendum didn't pass. They're saying, you know, some people will say, well, it was a very specific referendum and there was a whole lot of intricacies to it that, you know, my personal opinion on this has always been if the Wisconsin DOT would just say they're allowed on all of our roads and these are the rules they have to follow, same exact rules as cars, trucks, motorcycles, everybody else, get your license plates, get your blinkers, or don't get them on the road. I think it would made everybody's life a lot easier. The downside to that is the people that who want this don't necessarily want all those rules either. Maybe some do, some don't. A lot of people just want to be able to be with their family and go have a fun time. Some people want to misuse it as usual, but you know, that's not the majority as far as I can see. And again, we're all good people. We're all just looking to, you know, do our thing. And this is something that some people believe pretty passionately in. What we came to realize over time is because Wisconsin DOT as a state is not necessarily putting the rules, you know, clear rules on this, it's leaving it up to everybody else. And we're really becoming more and more of an island in the sense that we've voted not to make an ordinance, but everybody around us has an ordinance. The county has an ordinance.
The county has one.
It's growing. You know, we are definitely going to be in a little pocket. So the pressure is going to stay on. I don't know if this is a fad. It's going to be here for 2, 3, 5 years, 10 years, or if it's a new norm that's going to be around and they'll just create new vehicles that are more, you know, better, like more like this, but better for streets. Because these that are being created right now are mainly, they're designed for off-road, for dirt, you know, surfaces. So they're a little bit on the dangerous side if you're fooling around too much. So who knows what's to come. But as of right now, when we passed our ordinance to not have ATV UTVs, we then the county worked with some of the communities and they opened up about 625 feet of Griffith Avenue because it was a county highway and it connected one side to the other more easily than having to go further out down 13 in order to cross over. At that time, we had to decide, are we going to allow that to be open or not? We decided as a city to allow that to be open. So we had to come up with an ordinance that said none of this here but this. And at that time, we had a conversation about what about all these other... So they're the border roads, the mm-hmm. border streets, basically saying, you know, Grand Rapids has a street. Their side is open. Our side is closed. So now people can leave their house. You know, I guess they can figure out how to come back again. But the goal of this was to say, okay, let's just open the street altogether so they can leave and come back without breaking any laws or anything.
There's
like
no
that.
Signs posted.
There's no signs posted. So really, you should have signs posted and you should have the police on it, you know, like monitoring it. And if they come down the wrong side of the road, you know, then they're breaking the law. If they're going down the other side, they're not. So it's just complicated. So my understanding, again, with good intention, was to just make it a clear road, like this road is now open. Let's sign it. Let's, you know, make everything uniform so that people are just free to do this, you know, drive on these roads. So they went through the painstaking procedure of going through each road that shares that's shared with another community, and kind of went through some they didn't open up because there's no reason to do it. There's nobody living there or anything like that. Again, you're never going to please everybody all the time, because some people say, well, why do they get to, you know, have these legal on their side of the road in Wisconsin Rapids and we don't, because we're in the middle of Wisconsin Rapids. And other people that just say, just keep it closed, because give an inch, they're going to take a mile, which, you know, there's some truth to that, too. So mm-hmm. I think eventually they'll be here. They'll be in the community, whether that's in my time or not. It'll just kind of keep moving forward and they'll become more and more norm.
So let's go back for a moment to what the council talked about and decided when they did choose to open those 600 plus feet over there on County Z, Griffith mm-hmm. Avenue. The ordinance that the city created isn't the same as the one that was passed or that was discussed
Correct.
During the referendum.
No.
I've heard from council people that they talked about what they heard feedback from of people who were against the referendum and the things that they wanted included.
Well, yeah, the referendum, and again, it is what it is at this point. You know, you can always hindsight's always a great educator in terms of what I would have, could have, should have done. But ultimately, you know, that referendum was allowing for a lot of the normal stuff that is allowed in Wisconsin right now, because it's a DNR
mm-hmm. Which includes
system.
Like 12-year-olds being
right,
able to
was
drive.
The big one, which was mm-hmm. the 12 to 16 or 15.
People,
you know,
who aren't licensed drivers.
Right. And they did have to have some kind of a you know, class to go through, but that was for off-road stuff. So mm-hmm. nobody really, and I certainly did not want 12 to 15 year olds to be on the roads with some, like, we're a city, we're not a country road where, you know, mm-hmm. you got a car that passes every now and again at hopefully 55 miles an hour, if not 70, you know. But in the city, you have trucks, you got big semis, you got people racing around, you know, just getting to this roundabout right outside your window here. It's like a racetrack from the from the expressway over, crazy enough. You know, so there's just so many variables. And they say, well, they're going to be in between their parents. And there's just, as soon as that happens and somebody gets hurt, and maybe it wouldn't, maybe nothing would happen, but certainly there's accidents that are mm-hmm. happening on the roads. We all know that in the rural areas, let alone in the middle of a city. So
right.
I think that was, you know, they can say that was a big part of the reason that they chose not to pass it as a referendum, the people, the voters. But they would come back and say, no, we voted to keep ATVs and UTVs, regardless of who's on them, out of the community. So,
but the ordinance that the city has now does require it to be 16-year-old licensed drivers
on that stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And if these, you know,
as these roads open up,
yeah,
it'll follow the city ordinance that's already in place now.
The city ordinance. So yeah, they can ride them back on one side, but again, there's going to be some tricky stuff because
yeah.
those ordinances aren't identical.
But that's as this moves point. Forward, there mm-hmm. will be signage put up. I'm assuming that you
yep.
will be communicating more with the community.
Yep.
And speaking of that, you just finished up your community survey
yes.
on communication. So this is, can you give us an overview of the results here briefly in our last minute and how that will impact the city communications going forward?
Yeah, Emily Kent did a great job of putting out another survey. We did one a year and a half or so ago just to get a feel for where people are at, what they wanted out of the new website as we were creating the new website. About 185 submitted last time, about 165 this time. A lot more positive in terms of, you know, what we are doing and how we're communicating, and the feeling that they have of being able to communicate effectively and being heard, and then us reacting off of that. So I think it's all positive, and that's really all I wanted was to make. Part of what I want is to make sure that the community feels like we're being responsive. We can hear them as a government, and we're doing it together. It's not us versus them and all that. So I think things are going really well with that as we continue to evolve the website to become more and more effective as a communication tool and a marketing tool for the community, so that they know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and being able to be a part of the conversation.
Wonderful. And if people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way, Mayor?
Oh, I get the websites online there. I'm Zacher@wirapids.gov, or give me a call. It's 715-315-2925 is my city cell number. I'd love to get in touch with everybody, have a conversation, and go from there.
All right. Well, I'm Melissa Kay, speaking with Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Matt Zacher. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me today, Matt.
Thanks as always, Melissa. Appreciate your time.
And thank you to listeners joining us for News in Our Community on Perspective, 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR.